You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
This new year, why not let Audible expand your life by listening? Explore over 1 million audiobooks, podcasts, and exclusive Audible originals that'll inspire and motivate you. Tap into your well-being with advice and insight from leading professionals and experts on better health, relationships, career, finance, investing, and more. Maybe you want to kick a bad habit or start a good one. If you're interested in learning how to master your emotions and hearing scientifically backed advice for using your emotions as a tool, may I suggest Shift by psychologist and bestseller author Dr. Ethan Cross? Trust me, listening on Audible can help you reach the goals you set for yourself. Start listening today when you sign up for a free 30-day trial at audible.com/wondery. That's audible.com/wondery.
Alcatraz. We have always seen it portrayed as this mysterious, impenetrable fortress. Like in The Rock with Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage. And even in video games like Call of Duty. But there is a lot more to this isolated island prison than meets the eye. Or that you can even imagine, for that matter. Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History. In today's episode, we will be exploring the actual Alcatraz and revisit the time this prison became the stage for one of the most intense and gripping battles in American history, the Battle of Alcatraz. Now, as Hollywood has portrayed it, Alcatraz is considered a high-security prison. So before we go on, let's talk about some of the security measures in place. Guard towers strategically positioned, armed with formidable machine guns, surveying every inch of the island. The cells were reinforced with steel fronts, and the locks were operated remotely from control boxes, which was a feature designed to ensure that no inmate could tamper with them. And the windows were shielded with sturdy iron grills, leaving no room for you to even fantasize about escaping. It was obviously a lot, but the security didn't stop at physical barriers. Oh no. They had electromagnetic metal detectors stationed at key points. This was a way to ensure that contraband stayed out. And of course they had tear gas canisters placed in the dining hall, ready to deploy at a moment's notice if anyone stepped out of line. And after every meal, meticulous counts were conducted to ensure that no utensils were missing. A way to be vigilant. So basically, it was a fortress of order in a sea of chaos. As you would expect, all of this did not stop the inmates from trying to escape. They knew the consequences, but they had to try. One such attempt turned into what we now know as the Battle of Alcatraz. But the question is, how does an escape attempt escalate into a full-blown battle? Who were the players involved, and what circumstances led them to clash with the forces of Alcatraz? Let's start there. Now, the mastermind behind this attempted escape was Bernard Coy, who was working as the library orderly at the time. And this gave him the freedom to move around the prison more easily, he didn't exactly have a hall pass, but he was less restricted than the other inmates. This gave him the opportunity to look around and observe. Soon, he started noticing some flaws in the security. For example, at the west end of a cell house, there was a gun gallery protected by bars, but there wasn't any mesh or barriers. And the officer in the gallery followed a regular routine, which made it easy for inmates to figure out when the main cell block and the gallery would be unguarded. So he hatched a plan. Over the next several months, he recruited five other prisoners to join the operation. The first one was Joe Kretzer, who had already tried to escape from his previous prison and had failed. So, of course, Bernard needed his input as he developed his plan. And then came Marvin Hubbard and Clarence Carnes, who had also made attempts to escape in the past. These were three inmates who were part of Coy's main plan. And in phase two, Sam Shockley and Miran Thompson joined in. The wild card in this group was Sam Shockley, who was considered dangerous and possibly psychotic. But Coy knew that excluding Shockley would risk alerting guards and other inmates because he wasn't one to keep secrets or stay quiet. And so purely out of obligation, he was in. And Miran Thompson also had a past in escape attempts, but he was also known for killing a Texas policeman. And with that, Coy had a team of five inmates who were about to make history. So by May of 1946, Coy had assembled his team, and they meticulously studied the guards' routines and came up with a detailed plan. Every man was assigned a specific role, and the plan relied heavily on brute force. So on May 2nd, around 1:30 in the afternoon, Coy found the ideal moment to initiate the plan. This was when guard presence was minimal and all other inmates were resting. Coy hurried to the library and tapped on the access door to signal his accomplices. And with that, the escape plan was underway. Coy headed to the kitchen and alerted Marvin Hubbard, who suddenly hid a large butcher knife up his sleeve. Then after finishing his cleaning duties, he slipped out quietly. When Officer Bill Miller began his routine pat-down, Coy took the opportunity and grabbed Miller from behind, immobilizing him, while Hubbard struck the guard unconscious. Luckily for Coy, and unluckily for the prison, there were budget cuts happening, so nearby guard stations were unmanned, and this meant the attack went unnoticed. And thanks to that, Coy was able to take control of the kitchen. So now they successfully had a guard down, and Coy had Miller's set of keys. And he knew precisely which key to use. First, he dragged Miller into an unused cell, disrobed him, bound and gagged him, and locked him away. Then he used the keys to unlock the control box containing the cell access levers, releasing his other co-conspirators. The plan was in motion now, which meant that there was no time to think about it, and the riskiest phase was still ahead, getting into the gun gallery. So with Kretzer's assistance, Coy applied axle grease to his body. Months of weight loss had prepared him for this moment. He had slimmed down by 30 pounds by that time, and it worked. He squeezed into the West End gun gallery. Once inside, Coy was in an all-you-can-eat buffet. He picked the weapons he wanted and distributed them to his teammates. As they returned to prison, it was Sam Shockley's turn to play his part. From his cell, he started screaming as if in pain, which made a guard run to call for help. The nearest officer rushed to calm Shockley. But as he opened the door to D-Block, Coy jumped forward, slamming the door into the guard's face, then pinned him against the bars, and struck him with a billy club. Even though the guard was armed with a rifle, Coy had caught him off guard. He wrestled the rifle away and ended up incapacitating him. So with the guard subdued, Coy secured his rifle and continued his assault until he was unconscious. He then tied him up and stripped him of his weapons and uniform, just like Officer Miller. It's possible he was enjoying this, after being subjugated by these officers for so long. This probably felt like sweet revenge. Meanwhile, Joe Kretzer had also subdued a guard, locking him in a cell with Officer Miller. And with the immediate area secured, Coy passed supplies to Kretzer from the gallery. In less than 30 minutes, Coy and his team had subdued 9 guards, locking them away. Now it was working on 2 fronts. Subduing these guards meant that the opposing force was being lowered, and with each of the guards came their set of keys. With these keys, Coy was able to unlock the cells and the top 2 tiers of D Block, setting loose a number of violent criminals. With this, armed with guns, clubs, and gas canisters, all the inmates were now free from their cells, causing a nightmare scenario for prison guards. It was about to be a mess, and even Coy could not estimate the scale of damage he was initiating. Now, the first part of his plan was successful. They had their weapons, and the criminals were free, causing a riot in the hallways. But then, the biggest flaw of their plan became obvious. They couldn't find the right key to unlock the door to the recreation yard, which was crucial for their escape. According to their research and planning, it should have been on the guard's key ring they had taken from the kitchen. The missing key, labeled number 107, was in the guard's possession, as observed by Coy numerous times, yet it seemed to have vanished without a trace. Their plan hinged on locating this key. Without it, all of this would be pointless. Coy and Joe Kretzer stood before the locked door, frantically searching, wondering where the key might be. Time was slipping away, and frustration started to grow as they retraced their steps. They decided to return to the source, the kitchen guard. They confronted him, trying to figure this out. But he kept insisting he had returned the key to the guard in the gun gallery. But Coy knew he had already stripped that gun gallery bare, and there were no keys there. Slowly, hope started slipping away. Their escape was becoming impossible. Now, if you are wondering where the key was, it was actually with Officer Miller. What happened was, to Coy's misfortune, the guard had taken the key off his ring before the chaos erupted for an unrelated reason, and the key was left in his pocket. And all of the guards had been tied and placed in a single cell. So when Coy started interrogating Miller, they saw how desperate he was for the key. Clearly, Coy was letting fear take over. As he ran about Alcatraz looking for a single key, 2 guards asked Kretzer if he could release Miller, only because he was feeling uncomfortable and claustrophobic. And surprisingly, Kretzer agreed. As he untied Miller, Miller passed the key to another guard, who hid it behind the cell's toilet. After retracing his steps and finding nothing, Coy figured out Miller had to be lying. He returned to the cell and, with Kretzer's help, started aggressively searching all the guards. But Miller kept insisting he left the key in the gun gallery. Now, if you think about it, in desperation and chaos, what would be the next step? For the inmates, it was to abandon their search and just try to open the door with other keys. This, of course, wouldn't work. Frustrations were growing, and time was running out. The chaos in the prison caused by the free inmates would only last so long. They had to figure out something, and they had to do it fast. And that is when Coy got an idea. He returned to the guards confined in the cells, realizing the key to the recreation yard had to be somewhere within that cell, if not on their person. As the guards protested and insisted, Coy searched every inch of that cell and finally found the key tucked behind the toilet tank. And with this missing piece recovered, hope came back. Coy entrusted Miran Thompson with the key, who hurried to the door leading to the recreation area. He inserted the key into the lock, turned it, and nothing. He removed the key, inserted it again, and tried to turn it. But there was still nothing. How could that be? The actual key to the door was not working. They all tried multiple times, but the door remained steadfastly shut. What happened was, and the guards probably knew this too, repeated attempts to unlock the door triggered a safety mechanism. Now, whether you had the right key or not, that door wasn't opening for anything. They were out of time and out of luck. Meanwhile, in another section of the prison, a guard was trying to contact guard stations near D Block, but no one responded. He figured something was not okay and activated the main alarm at 2:07 p.m., signaling that something was wrong. As the alarm blared across the bay, Coy knew the gravity of their situation. They knew the island would soon be filled with officers, and there was no chance they had the strength to fight that. But Coy refused to give up. He ran to the prison bakery, which had a clear view of two guard towers. And when two tower guards emerged onto the bridge to investigate, Coy fired at them, hitting one guard in the leg. But this apparently turned out to be a bad move for him, because it alerted the guards to the fact that the inmates inside were armed. So while it would be more difficult, they were at least better prepared. Coy continued to fire, forcing other guards to take cover to avoid his bullets. And with that, Harry Weinhold, the fire captain of the guards, resolved to enter the cell block and confront Coy. He was a former Marine and known for his disciplined and relentless approach. So things were about to become difficult for Coy and his team. Weinhold equipped himself with a gas billy club, a weapon with a gas canister on top that allows for gas release if necessary. He entered D Block, where he encountered Sam Shockley, who tried to strike him, but Weinhold dodged the blow. This led to a heated fight that actually ended with Weinhold being subdued by fellow inmates. He was then thrown into the same cell as the other guards. So he may be tough, but maybe a sneakier approach was required in this case. Sadly, the assistant warden tried to adopt Weinhold's tactic as well. He took a gas billy from the armory and charged into D Block, alone. But Coy spotted him before he could deploy the weapon. He fired two rounds, one of which struck the gas billy, triggering an explosion that left the assistant warden half blind and burned. He retreated to the administrative offices, where he and the head warden made the difficult decision to seek help. They started calling law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, Coast Guards, U.S. Marshals, and Department of Justice. Coy and the team's worst fear was about to come true, the island filling with officers, all with the aim of bringing the six of them down. Now at that point, they knew escape was pretty much out of the question. All they could do now was to resist capture at all costs. So they made a pact, vowing not to surrender. and brace themselves for a prolonged standoff. Tensions escalated, and amidst that chaos, the authorities rushed to control the situation. They sent help from both on and off the island. A prison boat was sent out to guard the area around Alcatraz, while different law enforcement groups worked together to deal with inmates. Now, before things went completely out of control, Weinhold tried to reason with Kretzer, telling him that there was no way they could gain anything from this fight. But Kretzer had a rather grim alternative in his mind. He gave his team an idea that if they eliminated all the captives, there would be no witnesses to identify the escape's masterminds. It was simple, yet cold. And the team, of course, agreed. And that was the beginning of the end. With his team's agreement to the plan, Kretzer started approaching the front of cell 404 and fired his weapon at Captain Weinhold, striking him in the chest. And then he continued shooting, taking down guard after guard. For a moment, in all of that cruelty, there was hesitation. Kretzer considered sparing the life of one guard with whom he had a friendly relationship. But the plan was to eliminate everyone, and Shockley and Thompson emphasized that. So Kretzer raised his pistol to the guard's head, expressed regret, and pulled the trigger. The first detachment of Marines arrived at Alcatraz around 6 p.m., and there were some serious debates among the warden and his top guards about the best course of action to rescue their colleagues. Ultimately, they decided that 8 guards would lead a charge into the gun gallery before proceeding into D Block. As the guards went into the gallery, they smelled tear gas, and the air felt strange and quiet. Not the warning they were given. They were told the inmates were loose and things were chaotic. Somehow, the quiet was more disturbing. So they moved carefully into D Block, and Harold Stites, who had stopped a violent escape attempt in 1938, was the first guard to enter D Block. Unknown to them, Coy and Kretzer were watching closely. The two prisoners opened fire, resulting in a fierce gunfight. Stites got hit by enemy fire and later died from his injuries. The fighting went on all night, with Marines, guards, and inmates shooting at each other. Explosions rocked the cell house as grenades and heavy weapons were used. By the next morning, the Marines brought in heavier artillery, including anti-tank mortars and bazookas. Innocent inmates who were not part of this breakout were ushered into empty corridors and instructed to lay low. Now, the goal was to locate the 6 inmates who started all of this. A tunnel specialist was brought in to locate Coy, Kretzer, and Hubbard, as they were suspected to be hiding in the cell block. Demolition grenades were dropped into the cell block to help them search for any rebel inmates. The action was intense, and the inmates were now realizing that they might die trying to resist. So at noon, they managed to contact the warden, seeking a deal. But the damage was done, and the warden responded with an ultimatum, demanding unconditional surrender. And because they did not surrender, Marine and guards relentlessly fired upon the cell block until the following morning, Saturday, May 4th, 1946. And then finally, at 9:40 a.m. that morning, guards went into the war zone of D Block, and there it was, no resistance. As they cautiously advanced, they discovered the bodies of Bernard Coy, Joe Kretzer, and Marvin Hubbard. All three had succumbed to gunshot wounds to the head. It might have ended for those three, but it was far from over for the three surviving players, Clarence Carnes, Sam Shockley, and Moran Thompson. A few weeks following the breakout attempt, they found themselves on trial in San Francisco, facing charges related to the escape and the murder of a guard. Now, the attorneys who were representing these inmates argued that the harsh conditions at the prison were the reason they attempted something like this, as they were under major stress. The testimony from a fellow inmate showed Shockley's fragile mental state, portraying him more as a victim than a willing participant. But these arguments did not work. Shockley and Thompson ultimately received the death penalty for their roles in the conflict and were executed via gas chamber at San Quentin on December 3, 1948. On the other hand, Carnes, the youngest of the group at just 18 years old, was spared capital punishment. But he did receive additional life sentences to the one he already had. Later during his time in Alcatraz, he underwent a significant transformation, becoming a model inmate and excelling as the prison's chess champion for over a decade. Despite his multiple life sentences, Carnes was eventually paroled in 1973. So the 2 days of fighting that shook Alcatraz Island in May of 1946 took the lives of three inmates and two guards and injured several others. The battle remains a significant event in the history of the American prison system. And that is a wrap on today's episode. Following this, Alcatraz implemented stricter work procedures. But as I said, this still did not stop the inmates from trying. And so 10 years later, escape attempts resumed, leading to a successful one in 1962. But that is a story for another time. Thank you for listening to Hometown History. And be sure to follow along for more stories from the past.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.